With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The romance of his life, as Theodore Roosevelt described his relationship with the American West, lasted from 1883 to 1887. He would write 7 books on the West, and later as president, he'd set aside millions of acres of Western land for future generations. What he called the vigorous life, which later characterized Teddy Roosevelt, had its roots in his time spent in the West. The Third Transcontinental Railroad, the Northern Pacific, made it possible for people to travel in comfort to the Northwest Territories, first mapped by Lewis and Clark in 1803 to 1805, while reading dime novels filled with Western heroes like Kit Carson and Jim Bridger. It put areas like the Badlands, a smaller Grand Canyon carved out of the earth 60 million years ago, within reach of men like New Yorker Teddy Roosevelt. There really wouldn't be an America without the West. It gave great scope to American avarice, later justified as manifest destiny. For many, the simple phrase, "Go West, young man," was enough to send young men and women on their way into a virtually unknown world. The United States simply didn't have the manpower to control the land that came with Jefferson's Louisiana Purchase. Even today, Americans are fascinated with the idea of people heading into the unknown. The movie Wild chronicles the story of a woman who hikes the Pacific Crest Trail after her life disintegrates. She emerges a year later a changed person. This is what the West offered people in the 19th century, even more so than now. A chance to start again and remake oneself. We associate Theodore Roosevelt with what would become his famous larger-than-life persona. The barrel-chested, teeth-snapping, big-stick-wielding, swaggering cowboy expansionist who exemplified the vigorous life of the early 20th century. The vigorous life was a creed by which Roosevelt lived, and for him, the cowboy was its apotheosis. Through Roosevelt's influence, the idea of the cowboy made an indelible mark on American culture. Peril and hardship and years of long toil broken by weeks of brutal dissipation drawled haggard lines across their eager faces, but never dimmed their reckless eyes nor break their bearing of defiant self-confidence, he later wrote, elevating the cowboy to his ideal, a sort of Nietzschean plainsman. Eric Foner writes of the enduring myth of the cowboy, "The image of the courageous, spirited horseman living a dangerous life carried with it an appeal that refuses to disappear. Driving 1,000 to 2,000 cattle, hundreds of miles to market, facing lightning and cloudbursts and drought, stampedes, rattlesnakes and outlaws, sleeping under the stars, and catching chow at the chuck wagon, the cowboys dominated the American galaxy of folk heroes." This episode is the first in a series I'm doing for the Knowlton's Rangers about Theodore Roosevelt's experience on the Badlands and arguably what made him into the man and the president he became. I'd like to thank William Hazelgrove, who wrote a book on this topic, for sharing his research. And he's written about all sorts of American folk heroes, including the Wright brothers and the founding father, Henry Knox. Theodore Roosevelt was born a city boy in Manhattan, but it wasn't until he lived his life as a cattle rancher and deputy sheriff in the wild country of the Dakota Territory that Theodore Roosevelt became the man who'd be president. He said, "I've always said I would not have been president had it not been for my experience in North Dakota." He said it was the grim fairyland of the Badlands, where he became acquainted with the ways of cowboys, Native Americans, trappers, thieves, and wild creatures, and it was there that his spirit was forged and tested. So we're going to see how Theodore Roosevelt became the man he was in all his adventures, how he chased down boat thieves, he forced them over land for days without sleeping in order to arrest them and submit them to a judge, how he got in fights with cowboys at saloons, and all of his adventures that would make him the man that in 1912, when he was running for president under the third-party Bull Moose Party, would be shot in the chest and then go on to deliver a 90-minute speech. Now, it's important to note that before he set off, Roosevelt himself was far from the ideal cowboy type. He often pointed out that once a cowboy is a good roper and rider, the only other accomplishment he values is skill with his great army revolver. But even after years out west, Roosevelt never really became proficient with a lariat, though he once rescued an Englishman from a river with an amazing lasso throw. And his eyesight was such that he never became the dead shot of legend, though he did once manage to shoot a grizzly between the eyes. The truth is that Roosevelt became what he was not, a cowboy, through sheer will. When he first came out west, he was a sickly, weak young man who suffered so much from asthma that when he was a boy, his father would take him on fast buggy rides just to force air into his lungs. Many doubted he would survive into adulthood, but he did survive. Roosevelt became a delegate at large to the Republican National Convention and was a progressive reformer on the rise, when in 1884, both his wife and his mother died within 12 hours of each other. The light in his life simply went out. 4 months later, after a stinging political defeat, he headed out west and didn't give anyone a return date. In 1890, the superintendent of the U.S. Census Bureau declared the American frontier officially closed. Frederick Jackson Turner affirmed this and claimed that the frontier experience, more than any other, had shaped America's character. It had given the pioneer a new field of opportunity, a gate of escape from the bondage of the past. Teddy Roosevelt went to the Badlands of the Dakotas at the tail end of the Wild West. The asthmatic with thick spectacles, who stepped off the train in the town of Little, Missouri, bore little resemblance to the man who had returned years later, thick of chest and ready to tackle the world. He came back as the Teddy Roosevelt we now recognize. The West remade Roosevelt just as it had remade the country. Basically lawless and churchless, the West offered freedom unbounded if you were tough enough to take it. As he later wrote, "For cowboy work, there is no need of special traits and special training, and young Easterners should be sure of themselves before trying it. The struggle for existence is very keen in the far West, and is no place for men who lack the ruder, coarser virtues and physical qualities." This held great appeal for young Roosevelt, who would find the essence of America in the frozen and baking terrains of the Badlands. Here, the character of America presented itself to Roosevelt, and he essentially became that character. The West delivered this 125-pound man, this dude, a great adventure. He faced down gunmen, grizzly bears, thieves, rustlers, unscrupulous ranchers, ruthless outlaws, and Indians. He had the breath knocked out of him by overturned horses, cracked a rib, dislocated a shoulder, and nearly froze to death more than once. Getting lost in the hell that is the Badlands, all while fighting chronic asthma and ignoring a physician's admonition to protect his weak heart and lead the sedentary life of a recluse. To recover from the blows of losing both his mother and his wife on the same day, and in his quest to find his way again, Theodore Roosevelt would push himself to the point where his broken heart would either heal or stop forever. The West was just a place for such a sort of contest. All right, so that's the overview of the series. Let's jump forward to 1912 when Roosevelt is running on the Bull Moose ticket, because this will tie into our larger story. Teddy Roosevelt had just finished dinner at the Gilpatrick Hotel in Milwaukee and was walking to his car. He was to give a speech in the Milwaukee Auditorium. The election of 1912 had been vitriolic, with Roosevelt bolting the Republican Party and forming his own third party, the Bull Moose Party. Roosevelt was sure he could beat the incumbent, William Howard Taft, and the Democratic candidate, the former Princeton president, Woodrow Wilson. He reveled in giving speeches and attacking Taft as incompetent, and Wilson as an egghead who had the demeanor of a druggist, as he called him. He now planned to deliver another rousing speech and had the 50-page manuscript stuffed in his coat pocket, folded twice behind his steel glasses case. John Schrank, a 36-year-old psychotic and former New York saloon keeper, approached Theodore Roosevelt. Schrank believed that the deceased President McKinley had spoken to him in his dreams, proclaiming that no man should run for a third term. Schrank had brought a $14 Colt 38 and 55 cents worth of bullets and had been following Roosevelt through New Orleans, Atlanta, Charleston, and Tennessee ever since the dead McKinley had risen in his coffin and pointed to him and said, "Avenge my death." While waiting to shoot Roosevelt in Milwaukee, he had passed the time drinking beer in a local bar and smoking jackpot cigars. Now his opportunity came. Roosevelt had just sat down in an open car in front of the hotel. Schrank approached him, and Roosevelt rose to wave the crowd when the assassin raised a .38 caliber pistol and fired. Roosevelt fell back in the car as the bullet entered his chest after piercing the steel glasses case and the folded manuscript pages of his speech. The bullet entered under his right nipple and lodged in his ribs. The ex-president immediately took out a handkerchief and dabbed his mouth to see if his lungs had been hit. He then proclaimed he wouldn't go to the hospital, but would deliver his speech instead. Dr. Terrell, his physician, insisted he go to the hospital. Roosevelt would have none of it. "You get me to that speech, it may be the last one I shall deliver, but I am going to deliver this one." Theodore Roosevelt went to the auditorium and spoke for more than 90 minutes while bleeding under his coat, thundering to the crowd the immortal line, "It takes more than a bullet to stop a bull moose." The crowd loved it, and when Roosevelt went to the hospital, the doctors opted to leave the bullet lodged in his chest. He sent a telegram to his wife Edith, informing her that he was not nearly as badly hurt as he had been, falling from a horse. He boarded a train for a Chicago hospital and changed into a clean shirt and asked for a hot shave. He hummed as he shaved and then climbed into the train compartment bed and fell asleep, sleeping like a child. In the press, people expressed astonishment that a man who had been shot at point-blank range could give a speech for an hour and a half. But they truly expected no less from Teddy Roosevelt. The sickly, asthmatic son of a rich man in Manhattan was born in the East. The bull moose who spoke for an hour and a half with the .38 caliber bullet lodged in his chest, well, he was born in the West.
They were some of the most powerful men who've ever lived. They waged war, forged peace, and altered the fates of billions of people. And yet, they were just as human, just as flawed as you and me. They were the presidents of the United States, and they are the subjects of the history podcast, This American President. In each episode of This American President, we explore how flawed men have managed this awesome responsibility. To listen now, go to ParthenonPodcast.com or search This American President on your favorite podcast platform.
War has played a key role in the history of the United States, from the nation's founding right down to the present. Wars made the United States independent, kept it together, increased its size, and established it as a global superpower. Hi, I'm James Early, host of the Key Battles of American History podcast. In each episode, I discuss American history through the lens of the most important battles of America's wars. To start listening now, go to ParthenonPodcast.com or search Key Battles of American History on your favorite podcasting platform.